What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Welcome to the Angler Podcast. It's Thursday, March 7th, and I'm Elaine Lowe, taking the reins this week because Sean McNulty is... Well, he's actually out here in LA with us, but California Sean is a busy man, and the benefit of being here is that he gets to wake up at the crack of dawn to write the wake-up newsletter every day instead of at a reasonable hour. Isn't that right, Sean?
Yeah, California Sean does not host podcasts. He's a guest only, so that's part of my contract here, so it's the way it goes.
And of course, we're also joined by Richard Rushfield, who will be attending the Oscars this week. Richard, I want to be the first reporter to ask you this, but Sunday, who are you wearing?
Well, I'll tell you, I forget who they are renting me. Maybe different designers within One Tux. But the One Tux I ever bought, it bought many, 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 many years ago. So it's not remotely appropriate for me. I went to rent my tux and I asked them, because I've had to do this a few times in the last few years. I said, how much is it to just buy it? Mm-hmm. And they said to me, well, you know, the reason people rent tuxes is because their size fluctuates a lot, and they want to be prepared for that. And I was let them know I will not be fluctuating. And,
not a problem.
How dare they insinuate that?
Exactly.
But probably right that I should stick with renting rather than buying.
Okay. Well, I look forward to your hashtag outfit of the day on Instagram, Richard.
Yes.
All right. So we're going to talk more about the Oscars shortly. But first, a quick reminder that the Angler team is now regularly contributing to LAist, which some of you may know as KPCC, Southern California Public Radio's flagship radio station and digital news site. You can hear folks like Sean, Richard, Peter Kiefer, Janice Min, and myself every entertainment Thursday on Morning Edition, Air Talk, and All Things Considered. So today we're going to get into Netflix's live sports ambitions, Bob Iger's comments about killing a few Disney films, and other highlights from the Morgan Stanley Media Conference, as well as Richard's thoughts on hopeful spots in Hollywood's future, and of course, a little Oscars preview. So let's get started with Netflix. I was, as you guys know, because I can't stop talking about it, in Vegas last week for the Netflix Slam, which was their big tennis exhibition match between living legend Rafael Nadal and the next-gen superstar Carlos Alcaraz. It was a very big to-do. Co-CEO Greg Peters was there, bunch of Netflix execs. It was a sellout crowd of nearly 10,000 people at Mandalay Bay. This was a big, presumably expensive undertaking for Netflix, a company that continually asserts that there's not an interest in participating in live sports in the way that its broadcast and streaming brethren do, but it clearly does have some interest in it, because it just announced this week that it will host a special boxing event between Mike Tyson and Jake Paul on July 20th at the AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Sean, what do you make of this?
Is the F1 involved in this one, or in the boxing match? Is this a racing boxing match, or is this just boxing, Elaine?
I think this is just boxing. I don't think they're going to, like, play golf and then run over and hop into a cart and then, like, start duking it out.
Yeah. No, I wrote about it in the Wake Up this morning, but yeah, it's the Netflix punch card of, we're not in sports, but now we've hit tennis, we've hit golf, and now we've hit boxing. So I'm curious to see what is left, and the bowling tournament should be a lot of fun.
So nine sports, you get your 10th sport free. Is that what the deal is?
I think
now,
so. I'm curious to see what happens. Then they get a real deal. Then they get an actual license from a league. Yeah, the hits keep coming, Elaine. You know, WWE clock is ticking. Obviously, January 1 is for they're going weekly with WWE Raw. They had the Netflix is a joke happening in May, so probably there's more live streaming there, not sports. But again, this
they live stream the SAG Awards the other
week. That was exactly. So, you know, this is about, well, almost close to a once a month cadence here, Elaine, of a live event on Netflix, which if you were to say that 2 years ago, you'd been like, what are you talking about? So they're moving fast.
I mean, do we feel like these are all sort of like one-off tests just to make sure that the live programming is running okay? I mean, is this like a lead up to making sure viewers expect a weekly thing once WWE launches in 2025?
Well, I mean, from a technical point of view, I'm guessing hopefully they had the one from, you know, snafu early on, the Gremlins in the Machine, which seemingly has not come back. So no issues from the Netflix slam either. I think it's, I mean, A, it's just to get, you know, it's publicity. Netflix always loves an event and likes to be talked about, which this is succeeding in doing. But also to see engagement, Elaine. Do their subscribers want this? Which is a legitimate question that they don't have an answer to or have data on. So I think these moments or these events are a way to at least also test that and see, you know, for a company all about, you know, ROI, is what we're spending on this stuff. Are people going to, do they want this? And where are people watching? Because obviously, time zones. It's a global company, right, Elaine? 260 million global subscribers. This boxing match is going to be at, you know, 9 p.m. on a Saturday night. That's going to be, you know, so 9 a.m. fight fans in Australia. I don't know. You know, we'll see how that transpires.
Right. And they kept that in mind as they scheduled the Netflix Slam because talking to Gabe Spitzer, who was their Netflix's head of nonfiction sports, he had told me back when this was just an MGM event that had to get canceled last year because Rafa and Carlos both suffered injuries, that this was originally scheduled for the evening. But then when they approached Netflix and they partnered up together, it was really something that Netflix pushed to have earlier in the day so that their viewers in Europe could also watch, which makes a lot of sense when you have 260 some million subscribers around the world.
Yeah, I think it was 3 p.m. New York, so probably 8, you know, it's prime time in Europe, essentially, for what that event was. So yeah, exactly, timing. You know, the one thing with sports, Elaine, this is not on demand, this is live. So that is a much different factor than Netflix has ever dealt with before. But the hits continue. We'll see what else might be on their horizon. You know, the NBA deal, exclusive negotiations have begun with Disney, ESPN, and Warner Bros. Discovery. So that ends in about mid-April-ish. So we'll see if they jump in the fray. They've said or alluded that they don't, but the NBA Cup is also something that's kind of on the horizon as a separate thing that some people think they could possibly get it on if they wanted to. So we'll see how it goes. But sports is on the rise here as the linear TV business kind of leaves scripted to the streamers.
And an early data point that we got here, Richard, on Monday when I logged into Netflix, I'd watched the event live in Vegas on Sunday, but when I logged in on Monday, the Rafa and Carlos match, the Netflix Slam, had actually cracked the top 10. It was number 7 on that top 10 list, which is more than we can say for the SAG Awards, which I don't think got anywhere near that, as far as I was aware. But Richard, are you going to watch this boxing match in July? Is this something that interests you as a viewer?
I will certainly consider looking at the boxing match. I don't know. You guys are the sports people.
Are we? I think Sean is the sports person. Like, it's like sports X tennis is like, that's it for me.
And I'm all sports except for tennis. So we actually balance it out pretty well. So
if you ask me, like, how many of these things where people throw a ball to each other, like, do you want to see in your life? I would have said, I don't know, like, 10 minutes a year or something, but apparently...
this is an Olympics year, Richard.
There's a bottomless appetite for it.
Peacock's got a big summer coming up, Elaine, so a big test for them again, too. So again, another streaming service. They had the big NFL wildcard game, which got a lot of attention back in January. So, you know, it's just the conversation around sports, Elaine, is really so many more streaming elements to it now, where, you know, a few years back, it wasn't really part of the, you know, it was all about linear TV. So, you know, what it all means, or, you know, where the audience shifts to, or what the size of these audiences is. Again, that Peacock wildcard game was the lowest rated watched of all the wildcard games. Linear TV still beat it. So for leagues that are looking for exposure, which is really a big part of, you want to be the conversation, you know, where are people watching, you know, the linear TV and sports, it ain't broken. Like, linear TV, the NFL has, you know, one of the biggest years ever. It's, you know, the declines are not really there per se. More, it's the cable bundle ones that, their exclusive cable bundle stuff that's really, you know, in danger here, maybe shifting, like the NBA. That's why a lot of the eyes are on there, because they're mostly a cable bundle-based sport. So
I mean, like, existentially, though, it feels like the conversation leans towards sports. Like, there's this very optimistic halo around sports when we talk about sports in Hollywood right now, right? Because it's like, oh, scripted series, peak TV has peaked. We're never going back to 600 shows a year. Yeah. So, you know, is sports the next big savior for Hollywood? Richard. I mean,
it's the one consistent of Hollywood is they want to find what's the next thing that will be the thing that everyone watches all the time. And like, okay, so there's just going to be rom-coms, and everyone just wants rom-coms, but they don't ever just want any one thing. They want, you know, there's an interest in sports, it's perennial, so there may be, but that doesn't mean they stop wanting to see a science fiction show. All these things are always pitted against each other, and it's a zero sum, and that there's only 24 hours in the day, but there's very few people who just want to watch one thing in all their life. Mm-hmm. And those people generally we are people we keep an eye on and try to make sure they don't get outside unsupervised.
Yeah. Another point, you know, to make here, Lane, is, you know, it's the themes are kind of similar with sports too, where I'll say number one, you know, the transition to streaming is the same amount of money there that's in the linear bundle. And, you know, you're seeing this a lot of, you know, the regional sports networks collapse is a big thing I write about in The Wake Up. And, you know, starting your own streaming service, you're not going to get the same kind of audiences. The check, the $50 million season check you were getting on linear is going to be a $5 million check on streaming, which is certainly a theme in scripted that, you know, how are you, the linear TV on primetime ABC makes this much. When it streams on Peacock, it makes this much. They need the same kind of math. So they're having to deal with that in the very early stages, Elaine. So you're right. The narrative is very positive right now. It's a very hot topic that way. But when you dive into the math here, and this is what a lot of the leagues, it's not NFL aside, NFL's in its own league, but everybody else is MLB, baseball, basketball, hockey are all looking at their fundamentals right now. And they don't really have a real answer because they were built on the cable bundle as well. All the riches that they've had and the valuations for the teams that they've been bought at, you know, multiples over the years and chain, you know, $1 billion deals for new NBA teams, et cetera. So they're facing that. And also, Richard says it's a business of hits in Hollywood sports, maybe to a lesser degree, but it's about the marquee stars, Elaine. And just one other small note here that just came up today and recording here on Thursday, Warner Brothers Discovery is now putting True TV into essentially be a sports network now. So they're going to be in primetime. They're going to be doing alt casts of games that are on TNT and airing some college basketball or other sports that WBD has rights to. So again, the cable bundle is just becoming really reliant on sports. And that's probably the bigger thing here. Obviously, sports Hulu's out there and things like that as well.
You know, I mean, whenever the geniuses that run Hollywood decide they have to go all in on something, that's a great time to sell and look elsewhere for what you should be doing.
It was if like Hollywood were a part of the stock market, it's like, now's the time to sell.
If you'll recall back about 18 months ago when superhero movies were the only kind of movies that we ever needed to make again.
Yep. Yeah,
and there's no reason to hear any other pitches in superhero movies.
Yep,
and we're going to get a little bit into that superhero fatigue when we talk about Iger's comments at the Morgan Stanley conference this week. But just one last bit, when we talk about Netflix and live sports, this is a company that only had sports documentaries, and that was their initial foray into the space. And obviously with the great success of shows like Drive to Survive, which is in the ripe old age of season 6, something that its scripted brethren don't really get too much at a network or a streamer like Netflix. And then they've had Full Swing and Breakpoint. And so these events seem to be building on the docuseries. And from there, it's just sort of like, what do you think their live ambitions are? I will also say, when I got a chance to talk to Gabe Spitzer over the weekend, I had mentioned the Wall Street Journal report from November, which had hinted at this Jake Paul boxing event. And I had asked, what was the opportunity they saw around boxing? And he told me, you know, there's nothing. There's no discussions at this point. You know, we have a documentary called Counterpunch, he said. And, you know, obviously the WWE is coming up, you know, so, quote, we're interested just depending on the right opportunities. So flash forward to 4 days later.
Apparently, they got one. It just came in 4 days ago, Lane. It was very, very quick.
Clearly.
Clearly.
And so we get this announcement today about this boxing event. So they clearly do see some kind of opportunity here. And it seems to just be the slow build of one-off events. But it's like, what is like the best possible end game here for a place like Netflix, which has already done so well in the streaming market and is essentially trying to hold on to its lead right now?
Well, you also have to find growth, Lane, right? So, you know, are you going to get more people who love scripted TV? It's like, what are the buckets of people maybe who haven't subscribed to Netflix yet, you know, sports fans. Okay, well, let's get them in the door. You know, what things we can provide there. You know, there's a few things that you can look at it too. I said the data is a big part of this, Elaine. So if you're going to make a pitch to the NBA and you're going to say, you're our first thing and we have nothing to tell you about what people engage with live sports on our platform, the NBA will be like, thank you very much. We don't care how big your check is. We will go somewhere else where we know the return on investment that fans are actually here. So these live events are also a way to show other leagues that, oh, by the way, this is a great home for you. We get such great engagement. People will come here and watch this. And you know what? It plays in the UK. You know, they'll have all that data for these sports leagues, which is what they really care about. You know, I mean, they care about the check, of course, and let's not be, you know, stupid. But they also care about people watching it. They don't want to be buried anywhere. You know, Amazon's had a big lead on this with Amazon Prime and NFL. They took the plunge. And they've had the results, you know, we're up 25% this year, and they've been a great partner for the NFL. So if that's your competition, Elaine, is it's Amazon in that sense. They've committed to, you know, the National Women's Soccer League launches next Friday on Amazon Prime, not a massive league, but again, they're getting in that sports mix. So when those rights deals come up, Elaine, they're in the mix for it. You have to start that, plant that seed early, Elaine, and get that data going, and you can't just do it with a one big splashy deal. The WWE So there's a few things afoot there, I think.
Having these one-off live events as proof of concept and having a little data, and I'm sure as we get further into their conversations and their relationships with ad buyers because of the ad tier, there's got to be a relationship there too.
The advertising is a huge part of this. That's how you justify the cost. There are ads in this stuff. So that's also a big push to help out the ad tier there, Elaine.
Well, let's move on now to the other major event this week, which I'm sure everybody listened to, the Morgan Stanley Tech, Media, and Telecoms Conference.
I have my hand raised.
I know you do.
You know how to live, Sean.
I'm really having quite a week out here in Los Angeles. Yeah, great couple of days.
He's in LA. He's to the top down of the convertible listening to that Morgan Stanley conference.
Sitting at a desk listening to a conference on a pair of headphones. Yeah, it's really great. Anyway, but a few things of note here, Elaine.
Comcast, Paramount, obviously we'll get to Iger. I mean, Sean, you listened to a few of these. What was your big takeaway for the week?
I mean, these things are always hit or miss, Elaine. You know, some people, you never know. And that's the thing why people listen, because sometimes, famously, the CEO of Charter has made some pretty big comments about the business. They were there again this time, and there was nothing burger of a conversation. But they can use these forums to break news. There's generally, some in September usually, and then a few here in the spring, so kind of twice a year happening with a few of these banks. Yeah, you know, I mean, the Paramount one stood out most for me. You know, their CFO was up there, and news broke that, you know, from Bloomberg that apparently Paramount's looking to sell their India business. So again, Disney just exited their majority, so Paramount's looking for money. What's their next thing? They've sold Simon & Schuster, they've sold BlackRock, they've kind of gotten a few things off the ground here. What's next? They have a 13% stake in something called Viacom 18, which anybody who reads the Wake Up knows what that is. But anyway, looking to sell that as well for somewhere in the vicinity of maybe $500 million, but we'll see what the valuation comes in. That's very preliminary. So, but he was asked kind of what the plan is there. And he said, you know, we are in the business of looking at assets. So again, that goes along those lines, but also, you know, Elaine, it's our favorite word, Richard's favorite word, efficiency. Of course, everybody wants to be the most efficient thing that they can be.
They're unlocking value, too.
Unlocking value. That was also
unlocking shareholder value.
Literally a drinking game at this point, Elaine, I think, for some of these speeches. So, but, you know, alluding to streaming marketing spend and also people costs. Well, what are people costs, Elaine?
Oh, you mean headcount?
Yeah, layoffs. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you know, I mean,
I love the corporate jargon.
Yes,
for all of this.
We're people.
Right sizing the people.
We'll find efficiency in people. So layoffs may not be over here. Nothing alluded to, of course. You know, he said all the $1 billion write-offs are done. They didn't say we have no more plans to do any more content write-offs of that scale, but if anybody's wondering, you know, the job safety or whatever it might be at Paramount, not on a mass level perhaps, but they got some more trimming to do, it sounds like.
And, you know, Bob Iger made headlines at this conference divulging that Disney has taken some of its recent projects behind the barn. And what he said was, quote, "You have to kill things you no longer believe in. It's not an easy thing, but you got to make those tough calls. We've actually made those tough calls. We've not been that public about it, but we've killed a few projects already that we just didn't feel were strong enough." Richard, was this, you know, something that a CEO needs to divulge at a conference? I just sort of wonder what the point is of sharing something like that, that will almost definitely make headlines.
It's trying to say when that other guy who I appointed to succeed me was in charge, they were just rolling out anything. No one was thinking about it, and no one was looking at it. No one was giving any thoughts, but now I'm here and we're paying a lot of attention to it. So we're going to stop making bad stuff and only make good stuff now.
Yes, making great films.
Great films only. Yes, exactly. But, you know, he's reading scripts, you know, or saying scene cuts 3 to 5 times, Elaine, and he's emphasizing his really rolling up the sleeves. Like he said, you know, when I think it was a few earnings calls ago when he came in, I'm going to really fix the creative and get in the mix of it. And he reiterated that again and saying the conversation with creatives and getting the product there and things like that. So he was definitely telling Wall Street that he's on it at this point.
Holding the creatives accountable for their ROI, he said.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure who he meant were the creatives that are going to be held accountable for their ROI. It's like James Cameron gonna be hit with, like, if you don't bring in 18%, we're gonna be having a hard talk, Mr. Cameron. Yeah. It's like,
he'll get put on a pip at work.
I guess so.
Exactly.
So Richard Iger also said he doesn't think audiences are suffering from superhero fatigue and that they'll respond to great films.
Yeah. So is this a week? I think it's the red carpet question of the week that everyone is asked about, superhero fatigue. You had a whole bunch of stars chime in on that, and everybody gave the same answer. There's no superhero fatigue. There just needs to be better superhero films. And there have been some weak films. I don't think anyone disputes that there have been some weak superhero films, but, you know, enough weak films do sort of poison the groundwater and make the sort of make everyone less enthusiastic about the genre, and like raise the bar of what the next film has to do to get people back on board with this whole thing. So yeah, people would prefer to see good films than bad films, and those will be easier to sell. But I think people still are not panicking nearly enough about the cratering interest in superhero films right now. And you know, this week we're getting a lot of pictures from James Gunn just starting production on Superman off in where do they produce? Norway or something.
Yeah.
And it's possible that that film has more riding on it than any film ever in movie history. Like, you have you pretty much the fate of the entire Warner Brothers Discovery project riding on whether James Gunn can resuscitate the DC division and bring it back. And if he comes out of the gate with a misfire, that's going to, I mean, can't even imagine how they're going to respond to that. So no pressure, James Gunn, just an entire conglomerate riding on your one Superman film. So,
well, when you put it like that, the behind the scenes sounds like a superhero film of its own. The fate of the industry lies on his shoulders.
it truly does. It's, I mean, and if that fails, I don't know how Marvel's going to be feeling also. So
yeah,
a lot riding there.
Yeah. Big year in 2025 at both companies, Elaine, for sure.
All right. Well, you can keep up with the latest on all of these things, Netflix's live sports ambitions, the future of the film industry, at theankler.com. Up next, we're going to talk about where we can find hope in Hollywood. That's a good segue, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the Oscars. We'll be back in a moment.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
All right, Richard, your column this week, your first column this week, dealt with hope, something this industry hasn't had a lot of lately. What is there to be hopeful about?
Well, this week I wrote my annual State of the Industry address, my constitutional duty as a columnist. I have to address the citizens of Hollywood every year with my report on the state of things.
I liked the campaign art on your story.
Yeah, that was great. I love
that. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. And this year, the message of the last few years and in between has been the State of the Union is really messed up. And it's been some terrible State of the Union addresses. This year, when I looked at the State of the Union, I said, the State of the Union currently certainly is a mess, and there's plenty more bad times ahead, but that I can sort of see a bottom to it, in that as much as the companies are having trouble and there's all sorts of corporate structuring issues, the audiences are still there. They may have left certain things like the Oscars, long as lost 2/3 of his audience or whatever. We'll see if they get some of that back. But in general, you had Dune come out this week, was a huge hit. You have a succession of movies that come out in genres that are supposedly dead. And someone forgot to tell the audience that they're not interested in these things anymore. And they just keep showing up to them. You know, we were told that eventually it would settle out that there could be two or three, the maximum three services. So the rest were going to have to go away. But you look at it, and Paramount Plus is I believe, growing still in audience. And cost is another question. Peacock is scoring hits there. So there's no service that is cratering, that is just having its audience just decimate. Apple has had a big hit with Masters of the Air, which is spilling over to other things. So, you know, the Ankler rule number one, this is a business of hits, and hits change everything. And the audience hasn't said, we're not going to do hits anymore. We're not getting on board for any more hits. So you just have to make do with the scraps and the few minutes when we're not watching YouTube.
A lot of this feels like a perception issue too, right? It's like, obviously, if you're coming down from a glut of films and hundreds of TV shows, anything less than that is going to feel like a downgrade, like a decline. But in some ways, you know, again, the corporate jargon of like right-sizing might actually kind of apply here, right? Because it's like, who's actually able to consume all of that at that, you know, quality level that's been put out over the last few years?
They were producing more programming and shows than anyone could keep up with. And that can't go on. So now it's not. But just because people can't keep up with 600 shows a year doesn't mean they want zero shows.
Right.
It means, something closer to where they were. And that will be painful, and that pain is going to come. And a part of the point I was making in there is that the pain for the companies may not be over, and some of the companies might go through some really bad things. But in the end, if the audience is there, I think the audience will attract people who want to serve them, and new companies will emerge to come up for them. So, you know, maybe that's the company's problem. And maybe if a couple of them go away, well, that sucks to be them, but that need not be our problem. That if you're an employee for them at that moment, that's painful. But we get very in that mindset of the job of Hollywood is to protect our companies, to protect our great conglomerates, and let their business models stand however they are. And that's not what we're about here. We're not looking for an entertainment fix to a finance problem. They've got to sort that out. And what we've got to do is make great entertainment and keep the cultural product of industrial entertainment for the world alive here.
And, you know, Sean, one of the points that Richard was making in his column is that we essentially can see the bottom of this crisis, right? Like, which I guess in a way is a hopeful thing in itself, right? Because if there's not that much further to fall, the only way is up.
Well, that's, you know, we get asked this all the time. What's happening? What's, you know, and it's like, well, conversations I've had with past maybe 3 to 6 months, Elaine, it's like, yeah, okay, this feels like it's right sizing. The logic is coming back. Where the logic, we all looked at each other and be like, well, we all shrugged our shoulders was the emoji from 2017 to 2023. That's a terrible way to work, and it's a terrible way. Nobody, as Richard's written about, no one knows what the goals were. No one knows what we're even working to achieve. And when you get into that environment, you know, this is the, again, as Richard just said, it's a painful moment. I want to recognize that, but it does give you, would you rather not know, or would you rather have some certainty as to what's going on? I think people, and that is the point we're at now. You wrote a lot of last year, Elaine, you know, the strikes were very painful, and there's a lot of still residual effects of that going on. But to your point, is this, you know, knowing the bottom allows you to rebuild. If you don't know what the bottom is, you can't rebuild anything, you know, or get back to growth. So I think there is some, I'll say comfort in that, but it's probably the best word I can think of at this point. But it's not great news for everybody, as Richard said, but at least we know we have a new direction to go in, and we know what the metrics are, and it's back to financial red metrics. Richard said, the industrial complex, making these actual businesses that make sense, where we don't look around and see these $1 billion write-offs and be like, well, I don't know, seems this sounds bad, but I don't know why. Now we're like, oh, that is bad. Okay, now I get it. We have to actually justify our cost models here. So,
and forecast-wise, we are on that precipice where all of these streaming projections of profitability are starting to come into focus, right? Of like 25, 26, like, all right, we're approaching them.
It's funny how the calendar works, Elaine, you know,
distance.
2024 does arrive at some point, and who knew, you know, back in 2019 when they all put these numbers out there about, we'll be there in 5 years. But yeah, the other thing that, you know, reading Richard's thing about hope is, you know, just look at Dune 2. It's like, we talk a lot about here, you know, we don't make stars anymore. There's a real big star-making problem. But this return to logic, or whatever you want to call it, fundamentals, you know, right now, look at Dune, those are fresh faces across the board. That is not Robert Downey Jr., no disrespect to the people who, you know, who have been around, for George Clooney, Brad Pitt, it is not those people. These are all fresh faces doing a huge, massive global event. These are star-making roles. Austin Butler's continuing from Elvis. Timothy Chalamet, of course, is on a roll with Wonka and this. He's had quite a twofer. This is how stars are made, and the stars are being made again. But look elsewhere. Sydney Sweeney, what was the big movie of, Christmas? Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell doing a rom-com, all right? You know, that's two fresh new faces. Glenn is a new movie, you know, Twister's coming out in July. That'll be another moment for him. This is how stars get made. You know, Barry Keoghan from, you know, obviously get a lot of heat off of Saltburn. He's out there. Paul Mescal is the star of Gladiator 2 with Denzel. Like, that's another moment to build a new star. So Anya Taylor-Joy is the head of Furiosa, which we're going to see in May, and that'll be a huge star-making role. You know, Chris Hemsworth is in the movie, but I guarantee she'll be the one who pops off that film. So again, these are all names that were not on the marquees 3 years ago, and it's like, okay, the star-making process feels like it's returning. So again, I shared that, looking around the theatrical box office, that gave me a sense of hope with Richard when I was reading Richard's column as well.
Yes, not being in free fall anymore is a good place to be, isn't it, Richard?
Well, I mean, we'll take it. It's like I said, the pain isn't over. There's more to come. There's more downsizing, but there is an end in sight to this, and the end is that there's still audiences, and people still watch things, and they still like scripted entertainment, and they want to watch things on the big screen. They want to watch things on their TV set, and having YouTube and TikTok has not made them rule that out.
Yeah,
and if they don't, then sports will save us, right, guys?
The Oscars will, Elaine. Will they watch? They'll watch the Oscars this year.
The Oscars.
Yes, we have movies people have seen.
Yes, and for anyone who wants to participate, we do have an Ankler Oscars pool. I think there's still time for you to get your votes in. Richard, what are you most looking forward to when you attend this Sunday, both at the event itself and in who you're hoping will go up on the stage and grab a statuette?
Well, Strays is a nominated. Mm-hmm. So
the write-in candidate.
I don't have a dog in this race.
I'll be in Richard's handwriting. Yes, that was crazy.
I'm impartial this time around. I'm happy to see Hollywood celebrate. I'm rooting for the show to come in under 4 hours. If you're there, I'll be hanging out in the bar at the in the lobby level there. Come say hello. You can't really sit there, so 4 hours standing up in my fancy shoes is a long time. So let's keep those speeches tight, please. And we'll get through it all. You know, I think there's a feeling of excitement about this year that there's a lot of movies that people really love, a lot of different kinds of movies that people love.
Yeah.
The Barbenheimer phenomenon is a huge thing at the front of this, and the expectation that the ratings should rebound a bit thanks to that. So, you know, we could use some good news, so we'll take it.
I'm very curious to hear what your perception of the vibe is in the room, because I feel like what we've been hearing this awards season is people are just so excited to be back, right? After last year, even whether it's the Globes or the SAG Awards or whatever, people are just very excited to be back in the room.
I mean, they're always kind of excited when they're at the Oscars, so everyone's always kind of like manic and like looking around and seeing who else is there. So people are never just like glum, whatever the rest of the industry brought. It's still a big deal to be there. If you work in entertainment and you don't get a little bit excited about the Oscars, then you're in the...
Find a new profession.
Yeah, I think you shouldn't be here.
And Sean, give us a comp that we're looking at ratings-wise. What are you thinking for this Sunday, and what's the comp to past years?
I'll be putting a poll in the Wake Up. For Friday's Wake Up, we'll have a poll for our reader experts to chime in on that, Elaine, that very topic. Look, my main concern, it started at 7 o'clock this year, and I'm pretty sure 90% of America has no idea that that's happening. So that is, I mean, even myself, I'm like, I kind of want to tune in. I mean, I'm East Coast, so, you know, tune in at 8 o'clock. And that's a big question, Elaine. This is, to my knowledge, and maybe Richard, you would know, it's always been 8 o'clock. as a Showtime. So
as far as I remember.
Yeah. So and this has, you know, there have been some pieces in the trades, Elaine, to remember to tell everybody 7 o'clock. But, you know, they're kind of relying on ABC promo time to get this message across, which I don't linear TV promo time and social. So that's my, I'm curious from a numbers point of view, what that does to the show. Because the goal, to Richard's point, is to keep it under 4 hours. They want to end it before 11. So this show could be over at 10:30. So, and, you know, East Coast time. So what will that do to the numbers? That's where I don't know what's going to happen. I hope, I mean, obviously we have, you know, Barbie, we have Oppenheimer, we have movies that have grossed, you know, $1 billion, et cetera, et cetera. We have some good art house faves, a lot of passion around Poor Things, a lot of, you know, The Holdovers. Richard said a great variety of films, Anatomy of a Fall, even foreign film, you know, kind of coming in that way. So it is a great, you know, it's not a catch-all of audience, but I'm very curious. I just got to say, I'm very curious to see what this o'clock thing does. And you tune in at 8 o'clock, and it's like, oh, but I missed four categories already. I think that'll be a lot of America on Twitter being like, wait, the show started, you know, whatever it might be. I don't know. I'm very curious to find out, Elaine.
Well, I think it's time now for my next major story here for the Ankler headline. What time do the Oscars start?
That will get all that good SEO juice all over the trades is on Sunday, I'm sure, as the top story on all those websites. So yeah, exactly.
If you come in an hour late, though, you'll still have 3 hours of Oscars ahead of you.
I'm not concerned about having a show to watch. I just think I'd be very curious what they do at 8 o'clock if Kimmel comes out and's like, you know, hey, welcome to the Oscars. Like people who thought it was at 8 o'clock, if they acknowledge it in the broadcast, Elaine. So we'll see. But Elaine, are you doing a party? Are the kids going? What's the low household here? You're the X factor. We don't know about.
Well, I'll be in glamorous Palm Desert, California, watching tennis. Indian Wells.
I forgot.
Where else would one expect me to be during this time of year?
Knowing you, Elaine, that is, I would not expect anything else, quite frankly. But, you know, we'll give you a pass, I suppose.
And what are you, will you be back in New York at that time?
I'll be back in the, I'm only here just a couple of days in LA this time. So I'll be back making some bolognese on my couch. Just kind of, I'll be tracking all the ads, Elaine. So you know me, I'll be putting out a wake up edition on Sunday night, as I usually do a little bit later. We're going out right after the show, but I'm most, you know, I want to see who wins, Elaine, of course, and who gets the big accolade, and you know, so I know who was the worst performer. So I want to know who was no good, and I want to know who was the best one.
Solo bolognese. It sounds like a ripper of an Oscars party.
It's going to be a good time.
What do you make your bolognese with?
Well, I get Jersey sauce because I, you know, so I just make my own meat part of it. But you know, I go to the source.
What kind of meat do you use?
Well, Rich, I'll put that in the newsletter for you. You know, I'm going to leave. I'll invite you next time. You're not invited to the Oscars 1 year, Richard. You can come out east and you can enjoy it with me.
But, that'd be fantastic.
But I'll be seeing who spent anywhere from $1.7 to $2.1 million for 30 seconds of ad time on the Oscars show this weekend. And I'll wrap that up. The full list of things to note on who's spending and who's not and who Disney chose to promote with their promotional ad time as well in the show. So that'll be in the Wake Up on Sunday night.
All right. That's good to know. So everybody look out for the Wake Up on Sunday after the Oscars from Sean, and Richard will have his own take from being live at the event the following day. And of course, Manori Ravindran and I will have more series business newsletters for you all in the week to come. So let's wrap it up for this week. Everyone knows that you can get all of these stories and more as part of your Ankler subscription, including full access to the suite of Ankler newsletters and podcasts. So go to theankler.com to subscribe if you haven't already. And also please email us anytime at podcasts@theankler.com. I haven't checked that account in a while. I don't know what kind of fan mail, hate mail we've gotten. I don't know. Sean, do you have any updates?
They don't give me the password. Trust me. That's they keep me away from it. So, yeah.
Maybe that's for the best that they don't give us the password.
I'm fine with that. No. But please email us. Yes.
Just a reminder, if you are enjoying the podcast, we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a rating and review wherever you listen. It helps the show a lot, and we all really appreciate it. So don't forget to follow The Ankler on social media, at The Ankler on X and Instagram, and wherever you spend your time not watching TV. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you all next week.